You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. For this episode, we'll be talking about Nirvana, In Utero. In the room, I have Rob.
It's me, in here.
And on the line, I have Ben.
What's up, guys?
In Utero is the third and final studio album by the American rock band Nirvana. It was released on September 21st, 1993 by DGC Records. The producer was Steve Albini, and the genre is grunge, alternative rock, punk rock, and noise rock. And I'm going to read from the book, Jake Kennedy. Rock history is littered with albums crushed by the weight of expectation. In Utero has remained steeply rigid, still a presence today despite being the follow-up to Nevermind, the grunge landmark of the 90s. Kurt Cobain was reactionary in the truest sense. Nirvana strove to pull away from the metal sound on debut Bleach with the polish of Nevermind. With In Utero, they brought in punk producer Steve Albini. But fans and critics need not have worried. If anything, Albini's earlier work with the Breeders and the Pixies was much more chart-friendly than In Utero. It is not a punk album per se. The Beautiful Dumb is a case in point with soft cello and envious lyrics. Penny Royalty was similarly affected and paced, but the band could also destroy a listener with brute force. Opener Serve the Servants sees Kurt forgiving his absent father atop a bolsterous off-kilter rhythm, and the explosive Tourette's is as good of an instruction as any for the hairs on the back of your neck to stand erect. Yet, In Utero was not free of troubles. Geffen sniffed at an earlier version, and REM producer Scott Litt was brought in to polish off some of the edges. By this point, and with Kurt's spiraling drug problem, fans began to speculate that the singer was becoming angry, that his attentions might soon lie elsewhere. With increased press intrusion into his marriage to Courtney Love, the fear was that In Utero might never be released. Thankfully, it was. The album remains Nirvana's most arresting, signposting, and melodic direction the band would hopefully have taken had Kurt Cobain lived. All right, what do we think of Nirvana, In Utero?
If Kyle was here, he'd say it's a goddamn masterpiece.
It is a masterpiece.
It is.
It really is. I know this is not the sophomore album. It is the third album, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like it feels like a sophomore album from a public's point of view.
Sophomore major label album.
Yeah,
there you go.
Incesticide was
sure.
It's B-sides and covers and some radio appearances. It's not, you know, that is not an album. I mean, it's an album. I traded my copy of that Danzig album with Mother on it for Incesticide. But I digress. This one,
it's really good.
It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scentless Apprentice is in our cans now. It is still as cool as I remember it being.
Fuck yeah,
that fucking bass drum, dude.
The snap on the snare too. Those drums, wow. They just feel huge.
Oh, Albini knows how to fucking...
Yeah, he does
know. Mic a set, man.
Apparently all it takes is 30 microphones just all around the set in a sort of a little bit of a reverbed room. And he says that's basically all he does. Yep. He just records them playing drums and that's how it comes out. So good.
Yeah, this is the only song that everyone has writing credits on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting. What's the majority of the writing credits? It's just
Kurt.
Cobain?
Yeah.
Wow. Kurt.
Yeah, and as this album's, this is the album where he started demanding, 75% of everything, and they got 25%.
Wow.
Previous albums, he you know, he would pay out everybody like evenly. But yeah, once the money started coming in, I think the drugs started taking their toll. He started demanding more.
So did Dave and Chris get a third each of Nevermind?
Yeah, I believe so.
Cool.
Yeah. Still good.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I guess I wasn't in the room. I don't know who's writing all of it and who's doing all the stuff. The thing that always surprised me about this album is just where it goes. It's an adventure.
Yeah.
From the first Serve the Servants to Scentless, then a Heart-Shaped Box, Rape Me, Francis Farmer, then Dumb, then Very Ape, which is so good. Milk It. It's just up and down and up and down.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of saying on the last episode, I wish there would have been a little more diversity. This is all diversity, but at the same time, I don't know. It's like
cohesive.
Yeah, it's cohesive in Kurt Cobain's vision, I think.
Yeah, it's what 2 weeks in a studio will get you if you know what you're doing.
Which is funny because I heard that their instruments didn't show up right away
for 3 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Pachyderm Studios is pretty secluded in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the winter. They're like, they're snowed in this house with Steve Albini waiting on gear.
Yeah, Steve Albini agreed to $100K to do the record. And in a 4-page contract stated that he would get no royalties at all because he thought that getting royalties for someone else's work is evil for all intents and purposes, and said he preferred to be paid like a plumber.
Yeah, he says it's an insult to the artist to be paid royalties.
Yeah.
And like in the same breath with Steve Albini's like ethos, he doesn't consider himself a producer. He considers himself an engineer.
Yeah.
You know, like he's not there to impose his vision on what a band is there doing. He's there to enable them.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's a really good approach too. I thought it was funny too, because Kurt Cobain had really wanted to work with Albini, obviously for obvious reasons.
Jesus Lizard.
Yeah. And just, He didn't like the sheen of Nevermind. He thought it should be more punk. He thought it should be raw and not so like compressed and pretty. He knew what he was doing. He could see it within his peers, and I think he realized that like, oh, I do want it to sound a certain way. And he said he was a little like skeptical about working with Albini because he had heard he's a sexist jerk. But he said it was the easiest recording, hands down, the easiest recording process he's ever been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
I think it sounds like they all vibed. Like Kurt showed up clean and ready to work. Albini was there to help Kurt do what he was there to do. It just sounds like all around they just were a well working together unit.
Was it there where Albini said, "All right, if you guys beat me in a game of pool, I won't take any money"?
That's the rumor. I don't know if that's true.
I think that came from him, man.
Is he a shark?
He's a shark in everything,
he's
man.
He's a poker shark,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Man, so right now we're listening to the guitar solo for Heart-Shaped Box, and I think it's one of my favorite short little bite-sized guitar solos in like 90s alt-rock history.
Really?
I love it.
Even though it repeats the melody?
I think it's a melody worth repeating, and it's okay. The way he plays it, where it just sounds like it's wilting and falling apart, and then the bass is playing the same riff, but like a little bit dissonant, just like a little bit of like a counter melody to it. But it's just such a cool part of the song. It's my favorite part of that song.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always liked the trail off of guitar leads in songs. When it sort of hangs there for like just a tad too long or something, and just kind of you're right, just kind of like fades into the rest of the song.
According to Courtney Love, she asked Kurt to, "Hey, can you write me like a riff? I need something." So he went into a walk-in closet and wrote this in 5 minutes and kept it.
this is one of the ones that Scott Litt, you know, they said it was unacceptable. The album was unacceptable to be released on DGC Records, and so this is one that Scott Litt was sort of they considered cleaning up.
Have they ever released the original Albini mixes of some of these songs?
I think he went in and remixed it back in 2014.
Yeah, during the 30-year, what was it, 30-year reissue?
Yeah, 2014.
So 2014 was 20th anniversary deluxe and super deluxe editions have some of the Albini remixes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know if those are the things that are on Spotify or not.
No. It's just the original. Yeah.
Back in the day, I definitely listened to Nevermind more than I listened to In Utero. I don't think I ever owned a copy of In Utero. I don't think I ever paid for a copy of Nevermind, but I had cassettes and CDRs and stuff with Nevermind on them. The first time I heard Serve the Servants, it was striking how much it didn't sound like Nevermind. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the intent, you know. Yes. I think that that's a very conscious decision. It's like you can make a Nirvana sounding riff, like someone who's not Nirvana can make a song that's not a Nirvana song and it can sound like a Nirvana song. Like, but Serve the Servants doesn't have that sound that I was coming to expect from that band. From Nevermind, at this point, Serve the Servants is one of my favorite songs on this album. I like it because it's so different. I like it because like that riff kind of limps around, like it's got like a bit of a stanky leg to it, you know.
Oh, it's so good. The discordant notes that come out of this album are so good. And you're right, when I remember going out buying this pretty soon after it came out and putting it on and thinking, whoa, this is not the same. This is definitely right. Nevermind Part 2.
Mm-hmm. No.
And then when it got to, it was like Francis Farmer and like Very Ape and Milk It, I was like, whoa, this is gone completely different. Radio Friendly Unit Shifter also was always just like, love that song because it's just out there.
That is a... That is a very funny name.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially for the song. That is a... They had a sense of humor.
I had always thought, too, you know, we're listening to Rate Me right now, number 4, and I had always...
Wait, did you say Wraith Me?
I had always assumed that this song was... It has the riff like Smells Like Teen Spirit because it saying, stop, like, you know, it was kind of equating, like... the way he was feeling about like the industry and getting churned through the like whole media attention and like what Nirvana was doing. And it was like the most commercial song, but yet, you know, with these very, you know, intense lyrics, you know.
It's probably the most Nevermind sounding song on the album.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're not going to play it on radio.
No,
they had to kowtow to the to Walmart of all things. They had to change the name of the song to Waif Me.
Yes,
and
Waif Me.
They also had to change the back cover of the album to be allowed in stores. And and Waif Me did play on alternative radio. Radio stations wouldn't play Rape Me.
Yeah,
without the changed lyrics. Real fucking weird.
Mm. Cobain did say he chose Albini because he had produced two of his favorite records. Does anybody want to guess?
Surfer Rosa.
Yep.
Yeah.
Surfer Rosa by the Pixies.
Oh, and Pod.
Yep.
And Pod.
Pie by the Breeders. So, yeah, he loved his capturing the natural ambiance of the room via the placement of several microphones, something previous Nirvana producers had been averse to trying. So he sent Albini tapes of the demos they had made in Brazil before, you know, going in to record. And Albini sent Cobain a copy of PJ Harvey album Rid of Me from 1993 to give him an idea of the acoustics in the studio where they would record, which is funny because in... a couple pages here, literally two more episodes we're going to be talking about.
We're talking about Rid of Me. Yeah.
Rid of Me by PJ Harvey.
That was Pachyderm as well?
Yes. It was the golden time for Steve Albini. 90,
Yeah, I mean,
early 90s.
With the money he got off of this stuff in 95, he built his built electrical engineering. That's the studio he built. Not in case anyone doesn't know that.
Is that in Chicago? I would imagine.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Still open, and the rates are available on their website. They're really affordable.
Awesome. They are.
They're incredibly affordable.
I believe it.
Frances the Farmer will have her revenges in our cans right now.
Yes.
This is still one of my favorites on the record.
Yeah.
On a record full of favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah, this song's great.
It's really good.
The controlled feedback.
I don't know that much about the titular figure, Frances Farmer. I know that she was from Seattle and she was in Hollywood and she was, I believe, condemned to a psych ward against her will.
Yes.
That's pretty much all I know about her.
Yep. That's a good synopsis.
I didn't even know that was what this
was. And she will have her revenge on Seattle.
Oh, yeah. The reason I know is because of this album. And then, I mean, obviously Hollywood Babylon and like old Hollywood stories and stuff. But this was like the first introduction to like a lot of things. Sometimes you know how you learn stories from a popular media like this.
Man, Brian Eno taught me a lot.
Yeah. The sun is gone, I have a light, the day is done, and I'm having fun, I think I'm done, maybe just happy, think I'm just happy, think I'm just happy, think I'm just happy. I love Dumb, love it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I think it's better on the unplugged version than this.
Oh, it's great on unplugged.
But yeah, just I think it's a weird like tonal shift from Frances the Farmer this into Very Ape. I think that Dumb could have been
left
off the record personally.
Where's the side split?
There is. Are we even in records now?
Oh, I got a record upstairs.
But and like, they would have
from
cassettes
from 93. Oh, the cassette. Set.
Yeah,
that's true.
No, they released this on record.
Yeah, yeah. So there's going to be a side one and a side two on In Utero. I'm just wondering where the split is.
All right. Birch has found his record.
Dumb is the last track on side one.
Called it.
Oh, okay.
Very
good. That works.
Very makes sense.
That's what I thought.
Okay.
I'd never made this connection before, but I read somewhere this week that someone considered Dumb Beatles-esque, and I'd never thought that before, but I could see that. I think,
is it because of the strings, like the cello?
Could be the cellos.
I'm sure that doesn't hurt.
Once, if anybody ever hears cellos in rock bands, they're like Beatles.
Beatles did it.
Beatles did it. Very Ape. That intro guitar crunch is. Yeah, a lot of good crunch on this album.
Great crunch on this album.
Do you know, I don't know, Birch, do you know what kit he's using to get that crunch?
I mean, you could probably say a Rat or Tube Screamer.
Kyle, is that you?
Yeah, something like that. There's also that Turbo Rat. I do know Cobain did like the Tube Screamers.
You know, it's crazy that they have the two more pop-friendly songs set on side two, Penny Royalty and All Apologies. Yeah.
I think it's a good... I think they spaced them out. That's what I'm saying. Heart-Shaped Box, number 3, Dumb, 6, Penny Royalty, 9, All Apologies,
it's,
12.
It's good. It's good sequencing all throughout the album. There's just this album has a really good pace.
Yeah. I thought you could... You could have switched Penny Royalty. I thought Penny Royalty would have been a perfect closer. All Apologies is also a perfect closer. Either one of those songs could have shifted, and I would have been happy.
Did they ever officially release Penny Royalty as a single?
2014, I know it was, yes.
Okay. And, it was slated to be released, and then they nixed it when Kurt died.
Yeah, it hit number one in 2014.
That's awesome. Man, I missed that. I was listening to the radio in 2014.
I was 34 and a realtor. I don't remember shit. Man, milk it though.
Milk it.
Woo!
It's the only reason I probably am still not screaming about Jesus Lizard being in this book. It's because of Milk It is here on this album.
I'm still going to scream about Jesus Lizard being in this book, man.
I was thinking, too, I was trying to think about what is the most, what we would consider sort of like indie popular album.
Indie popular.
Yeah, yeah. Album. I don't know how to.
That quite was say in this. The book or that wasn't in the book?
Doesn't matter if it's in the book or not in the book. But an album that people would have bought that is just really kind of out there.
Just a crazy indie record that's.
Yeah.
That
Aeroplane.
That first Flaming Lips record.
No. You're missing what I'm saying as in popular. I'm talking completely mainstream. 100%, which means your mom has to have heard of the band.
My mom?
Your mom's pretty cool. I'm talking about just in general, people would have like went out and bought this purely out of just like, oh, I am a living person and I have the radio and I will buy this album.
But an indie band?
Right.
Like like the Blair Witch Project of bands?
Even more than that, because Blair Witch is still considered independent.
Since Green Day's Dookie was on a major,
yeah,
that doesn't count.
People have kind of heard of that. That's what I'm trying to get at. I'm thinking Nirvana's In Utero, it has a case for the most experimental album that mainstream audiences would have heard because they knew Nirvana just from like
Primus.
Yeah. But Primus is still a little on that cusp of like, did people really go out and, you know, everyone buy that album? And like, is it in Target? Is it in Walmart and things like that?
On the heels of Nevermind, everyone was going to hear whatever Nirvana did next, whether it was mainstream or whether it was just like recording farts underwater. Everyone was going to hear that because of how big its predecessor was.
Right. And I'm thinking sort of like the Beatles, when the Beatles did the White Album. Like everyone was going to hear that whatever weird experimental stuff like John Lennon was doing. And I'm just trying to conceptualize, was there another album that came out that everyone was almost made to hear because it was like, well, just like whatever came out after Metallica's Black Album, like everyone listened to
it.
Oh,
right? How about
Stanger?
How about Kid A?
Oh, no, Load.
Kid A is a good one.
That's okay.
Because it is a bit experimental.
So White Stripes
and on the
count.
Heels of something successful enough that everyone was going to be paying attention.
Because
everyone
knew it. Like it's literally soccer chants.
Right. But is that experimental? Like, do they get out there?
I mean, if you want to call going back to roots experimentally, next to what was going on the radio, yeah, it's
sure,
a little, little experimental. But no, it's not Kid A experimental.
I mean, it's more revisionist than experimental.
And don't get me wrong, I just think that Nirvana had such a popularity at the time. It's like the Beatles. I would say that it's like no matter what they were going to put out, some like everyone was going to buy it, and whether it was good or bad or in between. And they came out with
because
this.
He couldn't just stream it, right, guys? He had to buy it if you wanted that taste.
Yeah, Penny Royalties in our cans right now. This is another one of the songs that got the treatment from Scott Litt.
What do you feel? How do you feel about that?
I mean, I like the
I
way
like
the
way
songs
it sounds.
Sound.
I like the way it sounds, but I get why Steve Albini was like sad and mad about switching it up because he like didn't want to do anything mainstream. That was kind of his thing.
Yeah.
You know? And so to have what he did get polished like this is kind of that puts a bad taste in my mouth. And it's weird.
When he parted ways with the band, it seemed like they were all on the same page. They were all happy with the product they made.
It's
and
weird,
then like two weeks later, it's unlistenable.
It,
yeah.
Period. Like the biggest band in the world agreed to concessions from their label. That seems weird to me.
Yeah.
But I do like the way they sound.
Yeah.
Do you like the polish? Or would it not matter?
You say the song's polished, and maybe it is, but it's still just like a rough rock song.
It's true.
Yeah.
Great
chorus, though. It was a pop song like beforehand. Like this is a poppy like song. But no, I'm happy with the way. I mean, I was 13 and like, you know, going nuts to this shit. So of course I'm happy with the way it sounds.
There is a young garage punk band from this town that is named after a lyric in this song.
Oh, yeah.
There's a band in this town called Anemic Royalty. Yeah.
Oh, there it is. That beautiful distortion on Radio Friendly Unit Shifter. It's insane.
The control. I would bet money that they heard that phrase used in some meeting at DGC.
100%.
You know, what this album really needs is just like a radio friendly unit shifter.
Moderate rock.
Yeah, whoever is not familiar, people say units for, what would you say?
Like selling albums.
Selling albums.
Units sold. Yeah, it's a unit of measure.
God. And it's so gross when you talk to an artist and say units.
And this is probably the roughest song on the record.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would say, unless you count the hidden track or something, or Tourette's.
And Tourette's is on.
Tourette's is also kind of out there. But this one is wonderfully controlled. You're right. The sort of like
swirling,
swirling that he's getting with the vibrato and tremolos. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, this shit still makes me want to fucking flip a table.
Yeah.
Mix it up in the pit, get out of breath and pull something.
The way too that I've always found a really just love Cobain's ability to, I know he gets a lot of shit for not, you know, enunciating things, but the way he's able to sing softly and then scream like that.
Are you talking
loud, soft, loud?
Are you talking about soft, loud, soft, loud?
He's just a master at it.
Yeah, he listened to the Breeders and was like, I'm sorry, he listened to the Pixies. Like, Pixies, you guys got the goods.
Yeah.
You know who else is a master of it is Steve Albini.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that each one of these things has like a pop bridge, like for the most part, that just like pulls you back in.
Yeah. He can't get away from it.
Nope.
That's the Nirvana trick, is that they will always write a pop song, even within their most complex, out there, distorted song.
For about 25 years, I thought that track two was called Scentless Apprentice.
Oh.
Scentless. Like, you can't smell.
Yes.
But he worked for a perfume company? Was that the story?
It's based on a book.
Why would a perfume maker hire a scentless apprentice? It seems like that's the one qualification you need.
It was based on a 1985 novel, Perfume, by German writer Patrick Süskind, one of Cobain's favorite books. Novel is set in France in the 18th century and tells the story of an orphan who is born with two notable characteristics. He has an extraordinary sense of smell, but he himself gives off no body odor of any kind. He is reluctantly
Scentless.
Cared for. Yes.
He doesn't have a smell. He can smell, but he omits no smell.
That's correct.
It's like the
opposite. That's wild.
Of
Think of the dozens of dollars he would save on deodorant in a lifetime.
Yeah.
Dozens. Straight up dozens.
Should I continue to spoil the book or?
No, I think I'm going to read it.
Okay. It sounds like a very interesting book. Let's just say that.
Okay. I like to read.
Nice beach book, beach novel.
So how many units did this shift?
This sold, I want to say, 5 million, five times platinum.
So five followed by six zeros.
Correct.
At about $20 a piece.
$15 at the time, probably.
I don't remember how much a CD cost in 1993.
It was like 15.
It was like 13 or 15 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
They still have those tall cases at this point, or had they just gone to the square cases yet?
It was tall cases.
Tall cases.
No, no.
They had tall cases
so you couldn't stick them down, you couldn't steal them.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I remember my copy came in one of those anti-theft devices that, like, the white things that you couldn't take.
The fake tall case.
The fake tall case.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the square inside a tall.
Yes.
Yes. The tall exoskeleton.
Yeah, Tourette's is... It's a weird one. It's not as harsh, I think, as Radiofan Unisher. This is just more of a punk song.
Yeah, it's punk.
Yeah.
But it's very raw. It's very just ruckus.
Yeah.
I mean, if you put this on directly after anything on Nevermind, you would maybe take a step back.
No, not my favorite track on Nevermind.
TP?
The Gotta Find a Way, Better Way, Better Way. The one that starts with a, come on,
yeah,
people now.
Is that Territorial Pissings.
Territorial Pissings, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's true. They fit together. And we come to the end of the record, and maybe the end of this episode with all apologies.
And the end of their recording career.
The end of their recording career. They did a live show. They did a couple of live shows that were released. Yeah, because songs off of this were played on the Unplugged set.
That's true.
We'll be getting that record.
So this is released in September of 93.
Yeah.
And he died in what, like?
April of 94.
April 94, yeah.
There's those strings again.
Yep.
Coming in.
Is this another Scott Litt one?
Yes. Yeah. It becomes kind of obvious which ones were geared towards the radio play, right? Mm-hmm. The ones that Scott Litt were pushing.
Let Scott Litt get him in the door, and then let Albini show him where he's at.
Yeah. Any favorite lyrics from the album? I've always loved the Eat Your Cancer, or I Wish I Could Eat Your Cancer Where You Turn Black. That's always really good.
I mean, I think that the opening line is one of the funniest teenage angst has paid off well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And now I'm bored and old.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fucking yeah. Beautiful.
Thought I had a father, but instead I had a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Always really good.
Yeah. Was he still doing the collage stuff?
Yeah.
The back album cover is one of his collages.
Oh, sorry, not. I mean, the way that he was writing lyrics.
Word collage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he did that a lot. And I think for this one, though, it seems like he had backed away a little bit from completely doing the word collage.
I'll say that the album version of All Apologies is better than the Unplugged version. Which is weird because when I didn't get this record right when it came out, I got it after the Unplugged set, and like the All Apologies was like a radio hit, like with the Unplugged set. And so when I first heard this on the CD, I was like, oh my god, this is
yeah.
Are we gonna get Unplugged? Is that in the book?
Yes,
man. I listened to. It, back in the day, in real time, I listened to Nevermind and Unplugged a lot more than I ever listened to In Utero. As an adult, I've kind of rediscovered In Utero.
Yeah, the one that I listened to most was the one that I traded the Danzig record for, which was Incesticide. As far as a band that didn't have a shelf life, you know, they really put out some incredible material.
Yeah, very, very good.
Sad the way he went out.
Yeah, for sure. I would have loved to see some more stuff or heard some more albums. But I know that he was pretty, upset with a lot of the stuff that they were doing.
Yeah,
it would have been cool if he could have if they could have like gotten their own like creative freedom and kind of gotten out of that. Although they chose to be on DGC based on what Sonic Youth was doing and recommendations and things like that. I think it just, someone that young is just, you just can't prepare. I don't think anybody can be prepared for that.
Not at all.
Like what happens with Nevermind, it was just like one day you're, you know, in your,
a dude.
Yeah. In a garage and you're playing all these clubs and yeah, you're in a band. Sure. Everybody else is in a band too.
Oh my God, we get to go on a European tour?
Yeah. And then like
with Sonic Youth, they're cool.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then next day, you know, it's like, oh no, you're like at the Grammys and
surrounded by fucking paparazzi.
Yeah. Yeah. It just can't be.
No, that no one's made for that. And I, yeah, just real fucking sad the way they did that dude. Or, I mean, he did himself ultimately, but whatever. I'm going to go positive on this record. I do think it's an album you should listen to before you die. And I also think it's a damn near perfect record and paved the way for what's to come.
Definitely.
Which is Razorblade Suitcase.
Yeah.
I'd also never made that connection before I saw that in the chat, but yeah, this album, it just is. It's like in 91, grunge was still undefined, but by 93, there's very much a grunge sound. In Utero sounds more grunge sound to me than their previous two. Not that that's a good or a bad thing, but I definitely see moving forward so many bands having a sound that I hear in this album a lot. Bush being a very good example.
Yeah, I mean, Bush modeled themselves after mm-hmm. after Nevermind.
Sure.
And then, you know, with the what was that first record called?
Bleach or 16 Stone?
16 Stone. Mm-hmm. With the multi-platinumness of that, they yeah. wanted to go. We want to be more punk rock. So mm-hmm. then they got a hold of Steve Albini, and Steve Albini got along with Gavin like fucking gangbusters. Like sure. they were fucking bros. Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I did not know that.
Yeah. Gavin liked Jesus Lizard. He liked sure. PJ Harvey. He liked Slint. It's a cool dude. Anyways, I don't think we'll ever talk about Bush. So this is the end of our Bush chat. Positive for me.
Positive for me. You know, this band had a kind of a tragic end to a short career, but look at that, three for three. That you can't say that about, and not just good albums, but just like classic albums.
Yeah,
this band batted 1,000.
I'd throw Bleach into that pantheon too. I think that Bleach is a.
I was considering Bleach one of the three for three.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Incesticide.
No, that's a comp.
What about Outcesticide?
I wasn't talking about Incesticide. I was not talking about Unplugged. I was not talking about By the Muddy Banks of the Wishka. I was talking about their three studio albums.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, a real transition, too, from those albums. Like, from album to album, you got a different look, and they're all good. Yeah, positive for me. This is. I know I have a bit of a bias just from, you know, this is, like, one of those albums you get when you're young and you kind of defines a lot of the music that you like. But at the same time, I don't think I've ever like strayed away from this type of music, obviously with my love of, you know, everything surrounding it, like the Pixies and Sonic Youth and all those other sort of bands swishing around at the same time. But yeah, I just think they did something really good. With this album, and I think it opened a lot of eyes. I think it not just my own, but I think it opened a lot of people's eyes into the sort of like alternative scene or that Chicago scene we were talking about before, mm-hmm. and just tons of bands that are going to be doing this type of music. And this is definitely a gateway album if you're looking into a bit more experimental. But at the same time, you're right. It still has the pop hooks with the choruses and the melodies that you can hum along to and things like that. So it's not just the distortion. It also has those melodies that you can really connect to just in a pop sense. So, yeah, awesome. All right, next time we'll be talking about Jamiroquai, Emergency on Planet Earth. All right, thanks, y'all.